It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
You know, that other guy is getting paid family leave. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. But first to markets. The key stock indicators were up in early trading today, but the key story was probably the bond market, where government bonds seem to have fallen out of favor here. You can see it in the yield on the government's 10-year note, which was up sharply at about 1.85% this morning. On Thursdays, we consult Diane Swonk, chief economist at DS Economics in Chicago.
What we're seeing is not only has the Fed clearly signaled that if things keep going, they're going to raise rates in December, not next week, not before the election, but in December to stay out of that fray. But I think more importantly, we're actually finally seeing some economic data that's on the positive side instead of the negative side. The trade data that came out, real surprise this week, we saw exports pick up, especially capital goods, which means we're now able to pick up some of our manufacturers out of the rut they've been in by exporting abroad, where we're finally seeing some investment come back. That's going to raise GDP tomorrow to close to 3% after what had been everyone looking at what was originally the rebound quarter was whittling away at it earlier in the quarter. This data sort of put a nice positive spin, and from an unexpected place of all places, trade, which hasn't helped us out and has now turned to be a positive in the third quarter.
Economist Diane Swonk, thank you. And there's news that 3,000 fewer people signed up for unemployment benefits last month, a sign of economic strength. The number of people drawing those benefits is down at a near 43-year low. Now, if you work for a company with benefits, congratulations. Next week is open enrollment, when HR nudges you to get in your changes to health plans or tweak other benefits like flex spending accounts. It's also a good time to consider your retirement investment options. But one benefit that you're unlikely to be offered, family leave with pay, as is popular elsewhere in the developed world. Marketplace senior economics contributor Chris Farrell joins us here from St. Paul. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, David.
Well, the law says you can take some time off, but you're not going to get paid for it.
Right. The law says you can take up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave, and only 12% of U.S. companies, according to the Department of Labor, offer workers some kind of paid leave. But if you start plucking through the data, David, you start seeing more and more companies are adapting paid leave policies for family leave. Now, it's being led by industries where the competition for talent is really fierce, but we're starting to see this life stage benefit is seeping down farther into the workforce as the unemployment rate goes down. More and more companies are worried about skill shortages, and so they're thinking more and more about how do I recruit skill? How do I maintain the skill that I have in the competition for talent? Employees want paid family leave.
Look, this is a cost for the employer, but what you're saying is before, if you went into your boss and said, I want paid leave, they'd say, what are you, crazy? Now, increasingly, the employee can say, well, they do it at some other companies. It's not crazy.
More and more employers, David, are worried about, hey, these aging boomers are going to retire, we're going to lose this skill. And these aging boomers are coming back and saying, well, if you're a little more flexible and I get some family leave because I got some elder care issues with my parents, maybe I'll stick around. And also the public sector is starting to get into this. If you've noticed during the campaign, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they have proposed some version of paid family leave. Now, they differ on the details, but nonetheless, it's paid family leave. And a handful of states are starting to debate this issue and they're deciding that perhaps the United States should join the rest of the industrial world that offer their employees some form of paid family leave.
Another way of thinking about the idea of family values. Chris Farrell is Marketplace's senior economics contributor. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
This morning, a trade deal between the European Union and Canada got unstuck after objections by one portion of Belgium were somehow overcome. Earlier today, the Canadian Prime Minister had canceled his trip to Europe to sign the thing. Here to help us with this is the BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker in London. Good morning to you, Andrew.
Hello, David.
All right, so what was the holdup? It was a part of Belgium called Wallonia.
Yes, this is the French-speaking part of Belgium. And the problem is that the arrangements that the EU has chosen to approve this trade deal with Canada do involve going through approval by each of the 28 member states. And in the case of Belgium, they have to get the consent of all the regions. And Wallonia had said no. They had some particular concerns about issues to do with protecting investors in the event of disputes with a host government and concerns about agriculture. Now, it appears that the situation has been resolved, but we don't know exactly what has been offered to Wallonia to persuade them to come on board.
Now, presumably there are some Canadians listening now who will be interested. Should anyone be interested beyond Canada?
Oh, yes, because bear in mind, there is another set of negotiations about this famous proposed agreement called the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, TTIP. And that one is a good deal more controversial than the Canadian deal. In fact, the Canadian deal, in some people's eyes, is a kind of dry run for the really big one between the EU and the United States. And I think it's fair to say that if the Canada deal were not to go through, it's hard to see how TTIP with the US could ever do so.
The BBC's Andrew Walker in London. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
And something else to worry about. The International Car Wash Association is fretting that semi-autonomous vehicles, cars with automated safety features, can freak out in car washes. Sally Herships got the assignment.
Some smart cars are getting confused at the car wash, but maybe we're the ones who are confused?
They are smart vehicles, but let's not make the mistake of actually thinking they're smart like a human or a well-trained German Shepherd. It's not the same thing.
Jason Torchinsky is an editor at Jalopnik, an auto news site. He says these functions, like collision sensors, are designed for the road.
A car wash is a weird place for a car to be if its job is to drive.
We know the difference between a giant scrub brush and a brick wall, but cars don't. One of the reasons is context. Christoph Mertz works with robotic perception at Carnegie Mellon.
It would be very hard to teach a vehicle to distinguish between different materials of an obstacle.
But Mert says what could happen if consumers are willing to pay are vehicles that will make it easy to override their smart features, at least enough to get through the car wash. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And let's get something straight. Full-on driverless cars are not going to be filling our streets by the next 4th of July. Artificial intelligence experts I saw on a panel at Chicago Ideas Week the other day said maybe in a few years we'll see autonomous vehicles in controlled environments like airports, maybe on highways in perhaps 10 years. But robot cars driving all around, when is that happening? When technologists aren't sure because the answer is so distant, they often say maybe in 20 years, which is what the experts said for ubiquitous autonomous driving. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.